Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 201 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today her sexual health. We've got a terrific show coming up, and we are going to be having way fun with one of the top leaders in this field, Dr. Heather Bartos. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, just hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes right now. Well, not really. After this episode, to rate and review the show. We want to hear from you. We love your feedback. We just sit around waiting for it. We do. Swear. Not kidding you. So, this is your first reminder. We'll give you another one after this fabulous episode. All right. It's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life. It's all about her.
Sexual health. I bet when I say those words, a lot of you kind of eye roll and go, God, I don't even know what that means anymore. It's such a crazy world we live in right now, and everyone's talking about everything, which way, up and down. Who's to believe what's to believe? Well, today we have Dr. Heather Bartos. She is a physician, a leading voice in the field of women's health and wellness. She's going to help us straighten all these questions out. She combines the care of mind, body, and emotions to help women live a healthier and more fulfilling life. She's a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist, and she teaches women how to thrive no matter what stage of life they're in. Oh, man, we got some serious stages there, too. Dr. Bartos, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here because this is my favorite topic to talk about ever.
Okay, now, why should we even care about this sexual health thing? Come on, we've been doing crazy stuff for years and years and years, and all of a sudden, everything's about sexual health. Why is it important for a woman at any stage in her life to pay attention?
Yeah, it's a great question because all of a sudden, it's everywhere. Like, everything is about, you know, I need to up my sex game here. I need to change and do some crazy sexual trends over here. And it presents a very confusing message for women. But we've known biologically that women have had a baseline have a higher sex drive than men. And that actually, through a long standing years of a patriarch back in the history of things, that's kind of been beat out of us. And we're starting to really find that sex is a vital sign. It tells us how things are working in the body, like sleep, air, heart rate. I mean, these are all things that show us where our body is at any one point in time. And we're starting to focus on that for once.
I love the fact that you just called it a vital sign. You know, it's interesting, as you are very well aware, I'm all about healthy lifestyle habits, et cetera. And I'm part of a little group over at the American College of Sports Medicine. They're yelling and screaming about physical activity and why it should be a vital sign. So you don't just take a blood pressure and heart rate and all the rest of that and just gloss over the issue of physical activity. Well, here we are with sexual health. I think it's fabulous that you framed it that way because it is a vital sign. But I always think, you know, we're both physicians, that it's always kind of an awkward vital sign to a certain degree. One is, raise your hand if you're a physician out there who really got great training in sexual health. And number two, what about opening up a conversation with a patient, a woman in front of you, who, you know, is having her own issues with really wrapping her head around just opening her mouth and talking about sexual health. So this isn't, you know, when it comes to physical activity, you can kind of, you know, do the make it up as you go along thing. And no one's really quite awkward about it. But when it comes to sexual health, what would you recommend that our wonderful, mostly female listeners do to be able to open up that dialogue with their provider?
Well, and that's a big thing. You know, I first really started getting interested in sexual health with a 70-year-old patient of mine that during her well woman, she said, I have a question for you. And I thought, oh, she's going to want refills or she has a question about her DEXA scan. And she said, I don't think I've ever had an orgasm. And I about fell off my stool. And I felt so horrible for her. We had to talk about it. Now, every well woman exam, I'll just kind of, while we're doing our business, because you're naked, right? I'm not, but they are. And I say, girl, how's the sex life? How is it going down there? Is everything happy? Are you feeling happy with everything? And people will start to open up. I think it's hard, and we, as women, tend to get what I would call white coat laryngitis in the doctor's office, where we don't want to bring up things. We don't want to cause embarrassment for the doctor or offend them or take up too much time. And so women just sit by and they don't say something. But I honestly think it should be a part of every well woman annual visit. And I think if your doctor doesn't bring it up to you, then I think it's okay to say, hey, we may not be able to talk about all of this today, but my sex life is in the toilet. Or I don't think my sex life is as good as it should be. What can we talk about? What can we do? And you're already, you know, halfway undressed in these conversations. It already is awkward and vulnerable, but it's a private conversation behind a closed door, and it's a safe space.
I love it. So that basically means that you've got to be your own advocate. Don't just sit there, right? And you're the best person to be able to take care of yourself. And just don't make any assumptions that you're going to be lucky enough to have someone like Dr. Bartos as your OBGYN or your overall provider, because in many instances, that's not the case. So, you know, be more assertive about asking these questions of yourself. It also, quite frankly, opens up other discussions. You know, I had a woman I was talking to who was having real issues with, you know, her feelings of sexual health, et cetera, et cetera. Turns out, you know, I mean, she had a great relationship with her husband, da, da, da. But what she was keeping to herself, and it was only getting worse, I mean, physically, was urinary incontinence. She was about 50 years old, just about ready to, you know, pop right into menopause. And, you know, she was filled with embarrassment and shame, and she hadn't even told her husband. It wasn't like ridiculously bad, but it was occurring. She didn't even know how to talk about it. And so the sexual health conversation led to that, which led to some other interventions. It's interesting how it all works that way, isn't it, Dr. Bartos?
It's like we said, it just with physical well-being, it's completely intertwined. And it could be something as simple as dryness of the vagina as we get older. And that can happen as early as 40. And it hurts when you have sex. And women aren't stupid. If we touch a hot stove and it burns, we're not going to want to just keep go touching it. And so if it starts to hurt, we start to shut down, and then we emotionally start to shut down. And there's a big shame component in a lot of women's sexual health, huge shame component. And we have to get over the shame and the blame and the feeling of I'm not enough, I'm not worthy, and know that every woman deserves her best sex life.
So how do the stages in life, I mean, let's just do a little bit of physiology here. So, you know, you've got a young adolescent, all right? Let's just say she's definitely got her menstrual cycle now, all right? Mm-hmm. So how does her sexuality, her feelings about sex, how do they change as she transitions, you know, obviously from someone who is prepubescent to someone who's pubescent, that means adolescent, and then into young adulthood? Now, we're not going to talk about pregnancy quite yet, but let's just look at that for a minute. All right. So you're in your late, you know, mid to late teens into your 20s.
Right. You know, all of our sexual beliefs are handed to us from our families between the ages of 5 and 8. And that's when we kind of cement what our notions of sexuality are before we even know really what a penis and a vagina really is. We've already cemented the things around it. So if mom or grandma caught a girl touching herself and said, we don't do that. Oh, no, 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 that's dirty. We don't touch ourselves. That girl has already put into her mindset that sex can be dirty, or my vagina is dirty. And so a lot of what I see with the teenagers, it's getting better because more moms are talking with their teenagers about healthy sex. It's really trying to cement their ideas about what is healthy for them. That means not putting themselves in situations where they're just having sex because the boy likes them, or they're just because all their friends are doing it. So we talk about esteem and self-esteem and sexuality in that pubescent time, because again, we want them to be having great sex lives until they're 100. So we don't want to kind of really cause any trauma at that age group. So we'll talk about what is safe sex, what is healthy sex, when is it time to leave a relationship if there's abuse, and those kind of issues. And that's really that young group up until about the college years that will really focus on those kind of issues.
All right. So the reason why I bring this up is because I think that, as you're very well aware as an expert, there's a huge generational difference here. If you're someone who's 50 right now, that was a real different generation when you were a teenager. You weren't swiping right and left. You weren't doing hookups. You didn't have social media kind of pressuring you in many respects, et cetera, et cetera. And you didn't have Dr. Google there to give you whatever medical advice you thought you needed. So how is that whole new environment, social media and all the rest of it, changed up the whole issue of sexual health for people in that age group?
I mean, I remember, I'm in the age group where you might get something on your locker. You know, that was all you really got. And you heard a rumor that someone may have done it, whatever that meant back then, you know, behind the T buildings after school. But you never really knew any information, and you couldn't find any movies, or you certainly couldn't just get on Google and search, you know, boobs and find 15, you know, 1,000 images of those kind of things. And it's really, I mean, it's, the kids are smart. They are so smart. And I really talk to the moms. I really advocate that girls should be brought in for well woman exams starting the moment they get their cycles, 12, 13. And we need to have that conversation every year about, you know, stranger danger, as we called it when they were really young. But really, you know, a permanent picture on Facebook is there forever. It's digital. It's out there. And I really advocate that the moms need to be talking to their daughters and communicating openly. My mom didn't do that. I'm sure your mom didn't do that. You just didn't talk about sex. It was never discussed. And I remember asking my mom when I was about 15, I said, what would you do if I got pregnant? I wasn't interested in it. I just wanted to test her. It's what girls do. And she said, well, I would love you, but I would be very disappointed in you. And I'm like, ouch, that hurts. And I think having the conversation about, well, why would you ask that question? What are you thinking about? What beliefs are going through your head right now? It's really about facilitating communication. And I have some daughters who don't have mothers, and they bring their dads in, and we got to have that conversation with the fathers too. But it's about open communication with these girls, young ladies, all the way through. You know, please tell me if you're thinking about having sex so I can show you how to do this in a safe way. They're going to do it. They're going to do it at some point. Why not show them how to safely do it? And that's the conversation, you know, with, yes, Snapchat and all these emojis that mean that the eggplant means something and the peach means something. Those are all great. But, you know, it's really, please tell me if you're thinking about doing something, because I'm here for you. I am your advocate. And that, I see parents doing that, and their daughters are doing great. The conversation is there.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm trying so desperately not to sound like an old fart, but, you know, I think of Tinder and all the rest of that with the quick, you know, hookups and back and forth. And I just wonder what kind of potentially destructive effect it's having on what relationships are really all about. You know, I just saw a recent statistic that said that that the millennials and then the Gen Zs are having fewer and fewer relationships, that you don't see as much coupling going on, that there's also, and I know you saw this one, that there is tremendous loneliness among this crowd. And I just wonder, you know, when we talk about sexual health, I think, you know, a lot of young women especially are just getting carried away with the tsunami of, you know, just having a good time out there and not worrying about a relationship and taking it much more casually. I just wonder what that really means in the long term. What's your conjecture? Look in your own crystal ball.
Yeah, I think these young women are thinking that they're performing their own kind of sexual revolution, kind of what happened
there
in
you
the 60s
go.
And 70s,
there
free
you
love.
Go.
And every young person wanting that they're part of this revolution, they're against the man, against the revolution, they're doing something out there that's never been done before, but it's been done every decade. There's been some kind of revolution at some point, and it's usually sexually, especially for young women. And again, you know, I like to see even the young girls, even in the elementary school stages, talk about self-esteem and what is right for them. It's agency. You know, we talk about patient advocacy, where I advocate for you. A patient agency is where you advocate for yourself. It's your own, you're in charge of your own world. And I have so many women now that come in, they're like, well, I said, you know, do you have sex with men, women, or both? And they say, I'm polyamorous. I have sex with everyone. And I'm like, oh, how do I counsel this? It's a conundrum. And I just try to talk to them about safety and why. Why do you feel the need to do this? And I guarantee it's almost always a phase. It's almost always a phase. They go through exploration, and then they come out on one side or the other, either male or female. But it is your daughters are going to go through a phase where they're going to want to rebel and explore. Don't give them anything to rebel against by talking about it. It's not a big deal. If you say, hey, yeah, we all have sex. Sex is great. Sex is wonderful. But don't have sex just to go against me. Have sex because you want to, because you feel it's right for your body, that you care for the person, whatever your family's beliefs around sex are. But if you make it something taboo and exciting, they're going to go do it. That's why talking about it really takes the edge off. It's not that exciting anymore.
I love it. All right. So, this is going to be what we call an ever-evolving drama, kind of a work in progress here. And, you know, I'm kind of laughing anyway, because if you look back at the 60s and, you know, the hippies and free love and the birth control pill showed up on the scene, you know, I guess we're just always kind of going through these kinds of cycles based upon resources, new technology, new developments. It is what it is. And again, I know for a fact that people like us as practitioners just have to go with the flow and always remember to keep open channels of communication so that people feel free that they're having a transparent discussion that's quite meaningful to them. So let's flip over a little bit and look at, you know, this whole issue of what's normal. What's normal? I love that word. I know that you're probably sitting there just gripping your chair there, Heather. You know, just like, oh my gosh, what's normal? Well, I mean, first of all, what's normal? Is a college student supposed to be having sex absolutely every weekend? Are you supposed to have some kind of wild and crazy romanticized, you know, sex life and relationships and all that? And, you know, good Lord, what is normal? And I could say that because, you know, I think one of the times it really starts hitting a woman's life in a major way, I mean, like a major, major way, is during the perimenopause and menopause. This is when obviously a woman's, you know, hormonal status is like, you know, shifting sands here, and everything is just going through major transitions, and you feel funky, and, you know, you're up, you're down, you're all over the place, and then you settle into menopause, and then what's normal then? Help us understand what's normal.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question because everything does shift. And I really try to emphasize that to every woman I see is that this is not like, oh, and same with physical fitness. It's not like I did a chin up and I'm good. I can do chin ups now the rest of my life. One's good. You might have to start doing 3 or 4 or 10 to keep your muscle tone up. And for women, I say, you know, same with the weight. You may have been able to eat this when you were 30, but 40s now hit, and things are just a little bit different. And as long as women view their health and sexuality as a continuum, as a river, as it flows, then the normal doesn't seem so scary. Comparing yourself doesn't seem so scary. And I always talk about the Chinese call menopause the second spring, because it's a moment that they can reevaluate and kind of set their next course for life. And I love that. And we call it the change. We call it menopause. I mean, we call it everything that sounds so negative. And what is normal is what feels healthy for you. And I'll have women that will come and say, I don't want to have sex ever. And they say, and you know what? That I'm okay with that. That seems okay. My partner's okay with that. He's got a problem. And I say, hey, if it's okay with the two of you and you guys are happy and you're intimate still and you're still engaging in other things, that's okay. But if you're wanting more, one partner's wanting more, then that becomes more not normal. And we have to kind of start figuring out why. Why is it not normal? And I had a woman come to me last week and she said, I have low libido. And I said, oh, okay, well, how often are you having sex? She said, like 3-4 times a week. And I said, wow, wow, that's low libido. I'm impressed, girl, I'm impressed. And that's not normal for her. For her, sex should be, she thinks, every day, even at 42. And I have women that have sex once a month, and they're fine with it. So it starts to become what is your norm, and what is your norm for your age? And you're exactly right. As you hit 40 and perimenopause starts to check in, and I always say perimenopause is like reverse puberty. It's all the same things, but now you have money in a car, so you're more dangerous. Mood swings and, you know, heavy, heavy periods. And so finding out what is the norm with your doctor should be definitely assessed at visits. Also, you know, how is it different from last year? You know, and I also ask people, I'm like, is it really different? Let's document it for a little bit. Maybe it's really not different. And we see this with weight loss too. I eat everything perfectly, but when they document it, they're eating like a Kit Kat, you know, here and there. And so by really documenting how often someone's having intercourse, are they orgasming? If they're not orgasming, are they still pleasured by it? Does it feel safe and intimate? Does it feel like a great experience? Those are all things that we need to know, as opposed to that kind of childlike response, I'm just not having a great sex life. You know, we need data and details. We're doctors. We like data and details. So the more data that you can collect for yourself and for your physician, the better.
I love it. That's fantastic. So I know for a fact that a lot of women, you know, they'll hit once the internet and read about how people out there are just having ridiculously robust sexual lives after the age of, you know, 45, 50 and beyond. And then they're just sitting there going, that's not happening here. Is something horribly wrong here? What's going on? Okay. And I think that that's why it's very comforting to hear. I love the way you said it. It's whatever that feels right to you. It's okay with you. Especially as people age, you know, guys have issues. They may have a little type 2 diabetes or whatever, and it's difficult for them to engage in a traditional way. And so, you know, just exploring any way to be able to manifest, sexuality is perfectly fine. I think they need to hear that more. I think that women who are 50 and over, definitely 60 and over, came from a very different generation. And a lot of this was just plain not discussed. And I think younger people now are kind of going to the opposite extreme. Just, you know, Everything is game. I mean, it's like, all of the above. What's your problem if you have an issue? You know what I'm saying? I love it.
Yeah,
I really do. So that's really cool. I mean, it really is. All right. Let's look at this finally, this whole issue of the relationship between stress and desire. When a lot of women show up, I'll put money on it. I'm going to make a lot of money if you dare to bet with me that when they show up and they go, you know, I just don't feel like it, and back and forth, that more than likely – there's stress in their life that they've just sort of, you know, incorporated as a piece of life. And it's like, well, whatever. So talk to us about the effect of stress on sexual health.
Oh, you just like hit it on the head. We are really good now at knowing that our biggest sex organ is our brain. I mean, it always has been, but we're now really talking about that in the field of sexuality a lot more. And one big thing is that, one, whenever someone comes in and they say, I'm not having the best sex life that I want to have, I say, okay, what are you thinking about when you have sex? And if they pause, they tell me, well, I have to go with the kids, I have to go to Target later, and I have to go get this. And I'm like, then you're all up in your brain. You're thinking with all prefrontal cortex, right? The kind of evolved human that's thinking. And really, we have to get back into the limbic system, that animal side of things, where we use scent and sight and all five senses. And if they tell me, I'm really trying, I'm thinking about him, he's hot, like, I don't know what the problem is, then that may be more physiological. It may be more of a testosterone issue or something else that's going on. So I try to differentiate everyone into those two parameters.
I love it. Okay. I think that that's really important. Everyone out there, you know, you just cannot underestimate under any circumstances the power of stress on messing things up for you mentally, physically, physiologically, biologically. I mean, it's just, hello. If you want to have a terrible menopause and perimenopause, just enter those years stressed out of your brains, because cortisol, which is stress hormone, hangs out with estrogen. They both course together, and when one's a ride, the other one is. So it's just a roller coaster ride. You can make your life a lot easier by addressing stress right now. Now, for all of you who are listening to Dr. Heather Bartos and saying, who the heck is she? I love her. Then you need to run on over to her website, which is Heather Bartos. That's B as in boy, A, R as in Raymond, T as in Tom, O, S as in Sam, MD.com. And another one is BeAGreatWoman.com. Yeah, I'm signing up for that one. Oh my gosh, I just love that. I mean, seriously, all I can say is on behalf of all of our listeners, Dr. Bartos, thank you so much for being on the Herb Podcast.
It was my pleasure, Dr. Peak. I would love it.
Awesome. And guess what? Tag, you're it. We're going to have you on a whole lot more because we love you. And everyone out there, if you love her as much as I do, then you need to run on over right now and hit iTunes and rate and review the show, because I want to hear from you. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peak, host of the Herb Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peak or Twitter at Pam Peak MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Herb Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and hey, stay well.